Bexy's involved with the Karioi Maunga Ki Te Moana project, and specifically, there's an Oi Night coming up.
Tonight.
Oh, right. So it really is coming up. It's upon us.
Yeah.
And the Oi, for someone tuning in and going, what's an Oi Night? Is that where people get together and shout at each other?
Oi.
No. What's an Oi?
An Oi is a grey-faced petrel, so it's a burrowing seabird, and it's one of the few seabirds that still trying to breed and survive on the mainland.
Okay.
So they live in Raglan, which is really special because there's very few places they're still in the mainland.
And they've actually, you guys have had a lot of positive experience in the last couple of years because they've started nesting again.
Yeah.
Out. Where are they nesting, roughly speaking?
Their burrows are basically all the surf spots like Niwanui Beach, Monu Bay, and Indicators.
Right. Okay.
So they're flying along our coastline, and they're quite actually easy to see flying along the coastline around Niwanui Beach and even the top car parks, because traditionally they'll be nesting on cliffs and that kind of coastal terrain really quite close to the beach.
Yeah.
And they don't tend to go too far inland. So we hear a lot of them flying around the top car park, and we have some burrows around Bryant Reserve, and there's birds that'll be on the ground sometimes at night at Bryant Reserve just...
When you hear them, what do they sound like?
Kind of like, oi, woo, woo, woo. You want me to do that, didn't you?
I didn't think you would, actually. I thought you just would describe it.
You could play a little video. But, yeah, some people that live around Earl's Place, Monu Bay, Whale Bay, they might even be hearing them at home at night.
Okay.
And that's actually how they were originally discovered, was that people thought they were hearing bats at night, and they called Ollie Ganslett, Department of Conservation, went out to have a look, and found out that it was the seabird. And seabirds, so New Zealand's actually the seabird capital of the world. Did
yes.
you know that?
I'm not surprised.
Out of the world, out of all the species worldwide, about a third of the species breed in New Zealand. And about a third of those are endemic. So we've got about 90 species that breed here. And
what is endemic?
It means that they're breed or are found nowhere else in the world.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's really special to protect
so
those
native
species.
Native only to New Zealand.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It can be native without being endemic. But endemic means we've really got to protect them here because this is the only place they're breeding. And of those species, traditionally they would have been all across New Zealand. Pretty much everywhere you went, there'd be seabirds. All the way inland to Parangia, to the top of Karioi, there'd be species like black petrels. And, of course, pretty heavily along our coastline, Karioi would have been a seabird mountain. But through predation, habitat loss, and other factors, we've lost most of our seabirds from the mainland. So it's very rare to even have seabirds breeding on the mainland anymore.
Right.
So it's really exciting that we have Oi. And we don't just have them in the mainland, but we have them at a community that cares, you know, breeding actually under people's houses sometimes.
Really?
In around Manu Bay, under people's kayaks. Last year we had a chick under a kayak.
So did those people just leave their kayak there, couldn't use their kayak for a while?
Yeah, we asked them not to. We've actually removed the kayak and put in an artificial burrow box now, and hoping that they'll nest in that this year, because they return to the same site every year and the same partner. They breed for life.
Okay. So that person doesn't have to leave their kayak there forever.
No, they wanted to sell their kayak, so they sold their kayak and we put in an artificial box, and we're hoping the Oi will take to that this year. So up until a few years ago, we didn't know about any successful chicks, so there was a lot of predation, and they're quite susceptible to not just stoats, but also rats, roaming cats and dogs, something like, you know, Jack Russell type dogs that will dig into burrows. They're living in really public areas where there's lots of houses and lots of visitors. So we've been working on increasing our predator control all along the coastline, which means that the birds finally had a chance, and we got 7 chicks 2 years ago.
Yes.
That was the first time we had chicks, and we were stoked because we were, you know, thinking it might be many more years before we saw chicks and a lot more work.
But you got them right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And how many in the last year?
There was a lot
year?
Of work put into it, but yeah, we got them. Last year, we had 7 chicks again. We were actually hoping for more. We were looking at about 20 as we were getting later in the season. The chicks are... So the birds are coming in now to kind of meet and breed, and then they'll lay their eggs around July, and then the chicks are kind of hatch around end of August, September, and they're in their burrows by themselves till December. And so we were monitoring the burrows with just cameras outside. We're not too invasive, so the cameras just sit outside the burrow, and we kind of can tell from the behavior of the parent coming back to feed the chick that there's possibly a chick there.
Yeah.
And so around the end of the season, when we thought, okay, we've got about 20 chicks, we're getting really excited about it, telling a lot of people, you know, about that number, we had one stoat come in and it killed about half the chicks.
All right.
We had it on camera. It actually made national news. It's the first time, you know, nothing like sensationalism to make national news.
Yeah.
So it was on stuff.co.nz. And I've been traveling around New Zealand and mentioned the project and mentioned stoats. And I hear people say, oh, I saw this video once of the stoat. And I said, that's my video.
The nasty stoat.
So it did get the word out there. And it was, you know, good to have that on camera to know what had happened to those chicks.
But it shows, like, just one stoat, how much damage it
can
do.
Make a difference. And we actually caught the stoat. There was traps around the burrows.
Yeah.
It's just that when a predator, kind of especially a stoat, encounters a certain smell or something that it gets interested in, it will go for that first. So it went for all the chicks first, and then it must have gone in the trap. Because the first thing we saw when we went down to the burrows that day was a stoat in a trap. And then when we checked the cameras, we saw that the stoat had already gone to all the burrows.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe you could... Can you put, like, an oi smell in the traps?
And
go straight
there? We don't really have enough oyster.
You need to
synthesize it.
Yeah, synthesize it, artificially create it. It's very easy to have ideas like this, but it's probably a lot harder to actually make it happen.
No. We've increased our predator control all over the mountain, all over the coastline, which has meant putting in more traps, but also doubling our trap checks, which means doubling our volunteers.
Okay.
And Raglan is awesome. We used to have about 35 regular volunteers checking traps, and now we've doubled that, so we've got about 70 volunteers checking traps regularly. And still, I'm getting more volunteers coming in. So I'm not, you know, worried about having enough people in Raglan that care and that will come help out. We've had an amazing... kind of show of hands in this last few months after we mentioned that we needed some more volunteers.
So these are just volunteers for the traps around where the oi nest, or?
Yeah, when I talk about 70, that's all volunteers that check traps around, not just the traps where the oi nest, but also along the whole mountain, because stoats can travel quite far. So we need a lot of backup, a lot of buffer zone.
Is it possible that the oi would want to nest all the way around the mountain on the coast there?
No, it's not. Oi won't do that, but there are other seabirds that would have traditionally been nesting anywhere on the ridgelines, steep cliffs, even mountain top.
Yeah.
And we did have something interesting last month. A farmer in Te Mata came in. I better get the name of the seabird right. So a farmer in Te Mata came into the vet with a seabird he'd found, I think somewhere in his dog's mouth or something.
Right.
Which wasn't the best news, but the seabird was actually fine. And they called us thinking it was an oi, gray-faced petrel. So we came in to have a look at it, and it wasn't an oi, actually. I'll just quick look up what it was, because now my... I think it was a Cook's petrel, actually. And the Cook's petrel are thought to only be breeding on Little Barrier Island, Codfish Island. They're not there. If you look online, it says they're extinct on the mainland. They're no longer breeding on the mainland. But it did make me wonder, like, how do we know that? You know, there's a lot of cliffs and ridgetops that are not easy to explore. And even these gray-faced petrel nesting under people's houses, it was kind of, obviously the hapu were aware of it. And there were people that had lived here a long time that knew the gray-faced petrel were here. But I think the Department of Conservation wasn't aware of it until about 5-6 years ago. So,
well, they can't be aware of everything everywhere. I mean, it's
a
big country.
But, you know, a little bird living on a mountaintop, to me, I think it's a really good sign that perhaps these birds are still up there. And so all of the predator control we do across the mountain might be protecting more than we even know and more than we realize.
Yeah, because so there's the volunteers working around the oi area, but the whole mountain is... Is the whole mountain being trapped now?
The whole mountain's being trapped for stoats. Stoats are they're quite a bad predator. They travel quite a distance. And so along all the ridgelines, there's traps. That's about 400 traps just on the mountain. There's about 2,000 in the whole project.
Okay.
And
if I ask you about stats in terms of the number of stoats that have been caught and the numbers, like, was there a rush of stoats caught and then the numbers have declined since that project began?
There's kind of different trends based on seasons.
Yeah.
Definitely when we set up a new area, the first thing that happens is we catch a lot of rats, because rats have small habitats. So when all of a sudden you stick a trap in their habitat that they've never seen, they go for that bait right away.
Yeah.
So any new trap line will take out a lot of rats, first of all. Stoats have been steady, and that's one of the reasons we're increasing the trap check. So we're going to double the frequency of trap checks to see if we can get the numbers of stoats.
Okay, so they're not lying there with a stoat for a long period of time and no longer in use.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's, so you don't really need any more volunteers at the moment. This is not a call out for volunteers, is it?
Well, we always will. Like, there's always, we're going to be putting more traps out to keep all our volunteers busy. And also there is kind of, we're trying to open up more roles for volunteers, things like helping us with events, helping us with the data,
yep,
and the kind of more admin-y computer work.
Yes.
And that can be quite fun. It's not just, admin sounds boring. Well, I think some people like that word, but also things like watching the video cameras we have of the OI and taking notes on what happens on the video footage. So
that
it's not just boring numbers work, but can be quite exciting.
Do you speed the video up?
Yeah,
I do. Because you must have hours of footage of looking at a burrow.
Yeah, we can speed the video up. Sometimes it's on photo mode and you just go through the photos. It's quite funny actually, because it's like kind of the same photo over and over again, and as you click, little things pop into the corner, suddenly see a bird head, and it's kind of like a game. Literally, okay. Looks like a video game, trying to figure out where the oi are, and then you just...
Okay, so it is entertaining. But we should talk about Oi Night, which is tonight.
Yeah, right.
Now
that they're excited.
Yes.
We just had to get them excited about Oi first.
When and what time?
So, as we said, these Oi, like, they only come in at night. I didn't say that, but they only come in at night. And around this time, May new moon, is when they're coming into breed. So this is the best time to see or hear them flying around the coastline.
Okay.
And so there's no guarantee that we'll see them, but this is like kind of a chance to go out for a night walk, which is also fun. So we're meeting at the library at 6 o'clock, the Reglan Library, and that's so I can just play the sounds, show a few videos, so everyone kind of gets an idea of what they're looking at and why it's special. And then we'll go out to the beach, definitely by 7, maybe a bit earlier. We'll start to get into cars, figure out how many people we have, and go out to our site at the beach and have a listen out there.
Okay.
And so generally we say we don't cancel for bad weather, because they actually love bad weather in the winter, which is really fun.
It's going to be clear, I'd say, and quite chilly.
It is going to be clear, but I think we're just for people to make sure they dress warm, and if they have their own head torch, to bring it along.
Okay, so that you guys don't sort of, you're not off-putting for the oi coming in at all?
We are just standing on the ground. They are doing their thing up in the air.
Way up in the air, so it's not really an issue. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're not breeding in the air, obviously. Did they come into land?
True. No,
how does that work?
There's a lot of the birds in the air are young birds or prospecting birds looking for a mate.
Yeah.
Or they might be meeting their mate and just flying around. When they do land, they go into underground burrows. So it's another reason they're hard to see. It's always a little joke we've been saying lately that seabirds are actually quite hard to see, because most of them do come in only at night, live in underground burrows, and spend most of their life at sea. That's why the best chance to see them would be with a head torch, seeing them fly around or just hearing them call, and they kind of chase each other, and they're quite amazing flyers, swooping, and they've got this great wingspan.
They must spend a bit of time digging out a burrow, do they?
Yeah, they do spend time there digging. So every year when they come back, they tend to do a little bit of housekeeping at this time of year. We know this from the cameras. So,
but there must be sometimes they're starting a new burrow as well, are they?
Yeah, sometimes new burrows. They tend to use something that kind of gives them a start, whether that's a natural kind of hole under a root that they'll dig out from there, or a kayak, or a natural kind of spot in the ground that the dirt is loose. So they'll start with something that maybe even just under a branch or something, generally under roots or rocks. They'll start and then they'll continue digging the hole up to, sometimes it's up to 3 meters deep, one of our burrows.
Wow. And they must be quite vulnerable while they're doing that.
Yeah. At this time of year, what's really the main thing is that the adults are vulnerable when they're on the ground at night, which is why we ask anyone who lives along the coastline to keep their cats in at night. And it's amazing how far a cat can travel. We've, on our cameras, seen people's cats and been able to identify whose they are, because it's Reglan. Found that people's cats have come from way far away.
And told the owners, and they're like, really?
If you have any cats around town or anywhere close to the coastline, to keep them in at night would be the best thing at this time of year, to keep the adults safe while they make their burrows.
And there are, there's probably
and
the
of
issue
course, dogs. Hopefully, we don't have dogs roaming around at night.
Yeah, hopefully we don't. There's there's also the issue of feral cats as well. Is that a problem?
Yes, yes, that's a problem, and there are quite a lot. There is some feral cats around the beach and stuff, and so we do have live cat traps that help us find any cats that get caught. We'll go to the vet, and the vet deals with finding an owner or rehoming them or doing what they need to do.
Do what they need to do. Okay, people do want to know what happens to the cats.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's happening tonight. Keep warm. Meet at the library at 6 o'clock.
Yep.
And remind us again about, there's something about the chicks projectile vomiting their food to protect themselves. Yeah. Well, people haven't heard this. This is kind of fun, although not if it gets on you.
Yeah, Crystal, who is the director of the project, and me, we do our bird banding training up at an island called Bethel's, where there's a lot more of these grey-faced petrel chicks to band.
Yes.
It's a many year process getting the banding certification. So we've been up there many years in a row, and the funnest part is when you pull a chick out of a burrow, its kind of only natural defense is to projectile vomit. It's whatever its mum has fed it, which is usually kind of a mix of squid and a bit of fish. So,
right. So it's kind of bright orange
usually.
Really?
I think that must be the squid, yeah.
And kind of putrid smelling, no doubt.
Oh yes. Oh, but you get to love the smell when you love the species.
People may not believe you about that. You're even screwing your face up now.
But, thinking about it. Yeah, that is. And it's actually, you know, it's a goal not to have them vomit. So there's ways we kind of pull them out quickly and try to put them with their head covered by a pillowcase so they don't vomit. And that usually calms them down really quickly.
Okay.
So we don't want them to lose their feed if their mom's not going to be back for a while.
And so they feel like they're in a burrow again if they're covered. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Hey folks, we've been talking to Bexy from the Kurioi Project, and you're hopeful for... Oh, that's what I was going to ask too. So 2 years ago, you got your first batch of chicks. How long before they come back and start breeding?
Yeah, it could be like around 4 to 7 years, and yeah, they'll come back to Whangaroa to breed again. They'll always come back to where they were born.
And do they spend the entirety of the rest of their time out at sea?
Yeah.
On the wing?
That's what makes a seabird different from a shorebird. So, for example, a seagull is a shorebird because it does not spend most of its life at sea, and also where they feed. So seabirds feed mainly at sea, or only at sea, versus a seagull will eat chips from the wharf. So we know.
Anything, really. So that brings up the issue of how much fish there is in the sea and whether that's impacting the seabird population as well. That must be.
Yeah. And that's another part of our project now that we're starting to work on is a citizen science project looking at the amount of plastic debris that's washing up on our coastline. Start to contribute to the data set on plastic debris out at sea, and then obviously overfishing, making choices, I think, about what you eat and what kind of.
But they must eat smaller fish than we would want to catch, I'm guessing.
That's true, but it's all, you know, linked, you know.
Yeah, it's a whole ecosystem. A web. Yeah, no, we get that. Yeah. All right, thank you for coming in, Bexy.
Okay,
good
thank
luck
you,
tonight.
Aaron.